So I guess the next piece, and we do have Matic is here.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Yes, I am ready.
Okay, so this is taxonomy version control. That is going to give us a presentation.
Okay. Thank you, John.
Yes, sir. And you want to be here, I guess.
To you who don't know me, my name is Vladek Kravets, and I will present today IFRS taxonomy version control. The presentation is divided into two parts. First, we will focus on seeking your guidance on the specific issues that is related to the IFRS taxonomy deprecation schema. This will be covered in the first part of the presentation. And the second part will focus on more on discussion, and as well we'll seek your guidance regarding version control. And hopefully we'll have enough time to cover both subjects. If not, we can always continue the discussion later on at the conference call. So next slide. Before we dive into subject, I would like to set the context first. Usually changes to the IFRS taxonomy elements comes from following scenarios. Sometimes existing IFRS taxonomy elements needs to be corrected due to an error or typo, or another case is due to amendments in a standard that substantially changed the meaning of the IFRS element. And finally, changes related to a new standard that add new disclosures that entirely replace existing elements. All of these replace or delete items are moved to the IFRS taxonomy deprecated scheme. Next slide. So here is an overview of the current IFRS taxonomy deprecation schema. There are 297 elements in the deprecated schema. It's about 5% of the total number of IFRS taxonomy elements. The screenshot shows you a sample item called Total Cost of Defined Benefit Plans Abstract. And I would like to draw your attention to a namespace used for the deprecation schema, which contains the date from the previous annual release. And in our example, it is 2014 annual taxonomy. There is a prefix for this element, which is IFRS, and it's still being used in our deprecation schema despite of architecture change that was introduced in 2014 taxonomy. Next slide, please. There are two major problems that we identified in the current deprecating schema. First of all, it does not reflect architectural changes that we implemented in 2014 IFRS taxonomy, where we introduced IFRS full, IFRS for SMEs, and IFRS MC prefixes. And the second problem is an effect of keeping IFRS prefixes for all taxonomy old elements. Having the same elements in one schema that are coming from different namespaces is probably difficult to maintain. Next slide, please. And here you can see an example for what we encounter, we will encounter if we would like to deprecate revenue element. On the left, you have IFRS full revenue coming from IFRS full namespace, and you have IFRS SMEs that comes from IFRS SMEs namespace. According to the current approach, both revenue elements are coming from IFRS full and IFRS full SMEs schemes. Will have to be represented by one deprecated element. So If they are deprecated, they will be deprecated with prefix IFRS revenue in our deprecated schema. And at the bottom of the slide, we have included namespace for corresponding elements. So as you can see, there are different namespaces for different modules that we introduced in 2014 annual taxonomy.
Next slide. That's a clarification.
Yes.
So I don't understand why, if you're if you were deprecating both of these, wouldn't you have to physically deprecate both elements? Would you both have to show up as deprecated?
That's one of the issues that we are facing at the moment.
That's the question. That's the problem.
There will be some questions later on.
All right.
We'll focus on.
That's exactly the problem we're having.
So we'll ask some questions later on. Next slide, please. And okay. Here you have two main groups that we identified as problematic. In the first group, some elements are related to financial instruments, where they are deprecated from IFRS full namespace. These elements are deprecated after the modularization change. And in the second group, some elements are related to investment property, were deprecated from SMEs namespace. At the same element, names still exist in the IFRS full schema. So these two groups are a bit problematic at the moment, and we'll ask you a few questions how to deal with these issues. And this slide, next slide, please. And this slide, on this slide, it is our recommendation how to solve the issue in the short term. The fix would align IFRS deprecation schema to the new modularized namespace structure that we introduced back in 2014 annual IFRS taxonomy. In the table, you can see an example how prefix and namespaces would look like. So the question is, do you agree with the proposed action? Do you have any other suggestions? At this point, I would want to only focus on the short-term fix, not on the really comprehensive discussion. This discussion will follow in the further presentation, in the second part of the presentation. So this is our quick fix at the moment for our deprecation schema. And do you agree with what we suggest to introduce the namespace prefixes for structuring the deprecation schema?
Yes.
Nice and short.
I think it comes back to Louis' question. I understand it the same. If you deprecate from IFRS full, you should maintain this link. You shouldn't change to IFRS. Sort of like, so just to maintain this link for anyone who has been using that before or who still wants to for some reason use it in the instance document, they should be able to refer to exactly this item. So I think for this particular reason, it seems to be a very practical solution and the right one, at least to me.
Okay.
Any other comments, Luz?
Okay. Can Luz continue? Next slide, please. So the question is, what should be the approach towards elements deprecated in the past? Because bear in mind that these elements were deprecated in the past with IFRS underscore prefix. So what shall we do with them? We name the namespace. Next slide, please. Here are some, there are three options to consider regarding prefixes and namespaces for our deprecation schema at the moment. So the first one is we can have a separate deprecators prefixes and namespaces, the same way like what we do at the moment for the annual taxonomy. So have prefixes for IFRS full DEPR underscore, and the same for SMEs and others, or having deprecated elements with main prefixes and namespaces, so the same like it's on the taxonomy, but with the previous date. And the third option is the have main prefixes and namespaces, and the date would be different. The date would be the same like in the release taxonomy, the current taxonomy.
Okay, just a quick point on the third one. It seems that this would be incorrect because this would lead to the confusion with the current version of the taxonomy. Mm-hmm. So I think we should eliminate this one. The one and two seem very similar from both IT perspective and from the only slight difference from business perspective is that I think the prefix, maybe Goto-san can correct me here, but I think the prefix could more clearly indicate to someone that they are using the deprecated element rather than something within the namespace, rather than some date, because the date they would need to analyze that this is the date of the previous thing, whereas the prefix is more explicit saying I'm using a deprecated element.
Mm-hmm.
So if I would be in favor of option one.
Okay.
Option one.
You've eliminated three?
Yeah.
You said?
Yeah.
Okay, why?
Because it would create confusion with the current versions of the schema, so there is no labels
and references are not enough.
No, I think it would create issues for this software, which relies much more on the IDs and prefixes and namespaces.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any other questions?
Yeah, I don't have a strong,
strong opinion.
Okay. And what about the previous question that I've asked for elements deprecated in the past? Because at the moment, we are using IFRS underscore prefix. So all of these elements that were deprecated just like in 2010, 2011, 2012, what prefix do you want to use? And namespace, obviously. Because they were coming from the core IFRS elements schema. They were not divided at the time into groups, into IFRS full or IFRS SMEs. Do we have to, shall we include them or shall we remove them completely from the deprecated schema? Or
maybe we should put something like IFRS underscore don't use this element.
Just, you know, the follow what US GAAP, they have wonderful right at the bottom, all, you know, the numbers 1 to 50 deprecated and so on and so forth, the whole list of, you know, the deprecated elements.
Mm-hmm.
It seems to me that is pretty good, you know, the kind of the methodology in my opinion.
That's option 3, isn't it? From the
because
from the
yeah.
previous slide, isn't it? Which you said you don't support, do you?
Well, isn't this sort of a bit like one of the options we present later in the paper, I think.
What US GAAP does is uses the current namespace of the current taxonomy.
Yes.
And only places those elements in a separate ELR. So I thought that's what Michal said is not a good option.
They continue to exist in the same schema.
Yeah.
So it's a little bit of apples and oranges.
We do have some discussion on this later in the next second half of the slides as we're part of the general discussion.
I don't know if this is later in the discussion or not, but have you thought about just dropping them off at some point, deleting them?
Mm-hmm.
The problem we have here is history, because the modularization change happened in 2014,
yeah.
Which is already year and a half, more than a year and a half ago, almost 2 years. And before that, all the elements were just IFRS elements. We didn't have two namespaces or three, for that matter. We just had all the elements that were the same. No matter whether they were used in full IFRS or in IFRS for SME, they just had IFRS underscore prefix and the namespace which is resulting from that.
The ones that just have the IFRS prefix, what's the most recent one of those?
These are the elements that were deprecated in 2013. So the, all the elements that were related to IS-19 and fair value measurement, because these were the standards that were applicable 1st of January 2013. And 2014, I'm not sure if we had anything significant. Maybe something related to financial instruments, but I'm not sure. I would have to check if there is many. I don't think, definitely not many. I mean, there was a big chunk in 2013 because IS-19 and because the consolidation package and then the fair value measurement, so that was huge. I don't think we have any assessment of, you know, whether those elements are actually used by some jurisdictions, because we know that, you know, the endorsement in various jurisdictions on the way they apply IFRS potentially, you know, we know that the EU has moved the application date of the consolidation package to 2014, for example. So the new IFRS is 10, 11, and 12 were applicable in Europe from 2014, not 13, as stated in the text of the standard. Therefore, those deprecated elements would be usable elements for 1 year longer. Theoretically, there might be jurisdictions. I'm just not aware. I'm not saying they are, but I just don't know. There might be who, you know, kind of delayed the period for 2 years, and in such cases, those elements theoretically might be usable. Hard to say. I don't think we have done any research. I'm just looking around for Christy and Edrita, but I don't think we have done anything in this regard.
We haven't had anybody actively come back and tell us they would like to use the deprecated elements. We just know that there are some business cases we've seen where someone might want to do that.
But it would be a good opportunity now to get rid of all those old items because of the modularization change. Just keep those from 2014 on, when we had the two separate namespaces. And
this
just kind
is
of
a point of reference. When we started deleting ours, this guy did not fall in. No one even peeped.
So maybe
it's Jim, do you use, because I know you consume the XBRL file, do you use the deprecated elements from the US government or from the or does it matter to you?
Yeah, well, then we kind of keep the information on there with the deprecated items. But yeah, it hasn't caused us a major headache.
You can always refer to the old taxonomy version. I mean, the old taxonomy still exists.
It's still there.
It's just the elements aren't present in the current taxonomy version.
Well, we keep a record of all the taxonomy changes. We keep a record of what's deprecated and what's not deprecated, so we can always, you know, the items will be there, and we can cross reference to know that they're deprecated or not. So.
Actually, from the technical point of view, the prefix is just a prefix, so
yep.
The shorthand of the namespace. And if you even if put deprecated and put some semantics on it, but everybody can use in the report. So if you want to eliminate completely, not to be appeared in a financial report in the future, maybe we can introduce, and this is a pretty aggressive proposal, we can create some small standard. For example, which can introduce one attribute, deprecate it, maybe all the other attributes, or for example, the mirable should no, abstract, it must be always true, it never appears, and something like this, and control by the standard is much easier and a straightforward way too.
At the moment, XBRL doesn't have a standard way of marking anything as deprecated.
Yeah.
And if XII did want to pick that up, that would be quite handy, I suspect. I'm not sure it would whatever mechanism they choose would necessarily suit everybody though, so it would be interesting.
Sometimes they want to, you guys want to, this one is going to be effective, which this day, and it's not effective. So this one can be represented in a standard, in a nice way, so that would be very nice, I guess.
Actually, I think what Kato-san has just suggested is not a bad idea, to introduce this attribute of deprecated or not. It's simple, it's quick, it will apply to the entire taxonomy consistently, and it will remove the future problems of, you know, changing the prefixes or the namespaces.
Mm. Yeah.
Where would the attribute go?
Custom attributes for the element.
Are we talking here about elements, or we can
actually, you can deprecate anything. Because the custom attribute applies to any concept that you define in the schema, so.
What about deprecating, if we wanted to say deprecate labels that keep them hanging around, to say we've changed this label, keeping the old one?
Have left.
I haven't actually, I don't think we've actually ever wanted to deprecate an individual label. I'm just thinking of.
No, I don't think that would, anyway. I don't think that would apply to labels, because that the label would be just a value of the attribute, right? So
yeah.
This will not apply.
Well, it would have the arc and so on. You'd need a deprecated arc or something weird.
I don't think this will be available. I think mostly elements, dimensions, domain members, these kind of things.
Yeah. What about ELRs?
No.
All right, next slide, please.
Yes.
Yeah. So our recommendation, our preferred option is option number two. And for example, if we went and
we've kind of already said
I don't think it's preferred.
Yeah.
I think this is a question if option two is preferred. I think
yeah.
We agreed on one, didn't we?
We've kind of agreed on one.
We agreed on one, so I guess we
okay. Next slide. So at this moment, now we'll proceed to the second part of the presentation, where we focus on discussion related to versioning control. So we have presented four topics in the ITCG agenda paper 6B. I think I've printed the paper, and you should have it next to you. If you don't have your copy, just let me know. I have a few copies here still available. And we don't have much time to discuss every option in details or how to implement certain solutions. But at this stage, we would like to hear from you if you have any suggestions that we should investigate to improve IFRS taxonomy version control. So, next slide. To start this, the discussion, we have prepared a few questions that can be helpful to start the discussion. These questions are taken from the paper itself. So, the first question is, do you consider the currently scope of the IFRS taxonomy version to be appropriate?
So by scope, for those who haven't had a chance to do their homework, we're talking about the moment the taxonomy has a version that applies to the whole taxonomy. So there is, we change the namespace, it has a date, that date is consistent across all places that it appears across the taxonomy. So that's in the namespaces and the file names. So scope would be, do we have a different level to which we version? Do we have individual versions for files? Could we have individual versions for elements? Are we versioning at the right level, providing a version identifier at the right level at the moment? Is the current one causing anybody any problems? Or is there anything that people would like to do that isn't supported by it? That kind of thing. Do any of you care?
I just quickly can clear it off, but I think on the question number one, if we go back to the original assumptions of the versioning discussions and working group around XBL International, we had, I think, two or three cases. One, version instant documents, so to be able to version reports. Second, version taxonomies. And third, provide a mapping from one version to another. I recall these three cases. Currently, with the IFRS versioning, we provide the versioning on the taxonomies, definitely. I mean, we provide the distinction between the two versions of the taxonomy. We can show the diff. I don't think we very much support the versioning on the report side, right?
No, we don't.
And I think it's not possible currently to transform one version of a report according to the versioning information into another one, right?
Yeah.
So I mean, there is still some playing field for us. I don't think it's particularly pressing. I haven't heard any comments from the regulators around the world that would press this as a absolutely top priority for them. On the other hand, we have another example, which is going to the question number two, and I think, again, some people around the table have participated in that. The EBA has created this so-called model schema, and the model schema applies some attributes on top of these versioning XBL international approaches, which are things like, I think, applicable date or things like that. There's the period of applicability of the element and these kind of concepts, and also the modules and frameworks and so on. So it sort of provides a slightly different perspective on versioning. Perhaps it would be worth to initially research that perspective and see to which extent it would apply to IFRS. That would be just all the comments from my side.
And Michal, all of these additional attributes, are they stored somehow in XML, and are they stored on the concepts, or?
Yes, they are stored in most cases on the concepts. There are those additional attributes that are created similar to what Goto-san suggested for the deprecation.
So basically the level of the scope is on concept level.
I don't want to mislead you because I don't remember, so we can check it offline, but I think yes.
So one of the things that we were looking at in the scope discussion is at the moment the only way you know that the whole taxonomy has changed because the data's changed. So when you get a new taxonomy, the only way you know which elements have changed is to diff it with the previous taxonomy via the versioning report.
Mm.
That might be fine. However, another option would be to provide change information on an individual concept level in the taxonomy so that you know what's changed. So the scope question is kind of, would people like information at that level, or are they happy with it at the taxonomy level? I know some other taxonomies, for example, also have modular file structures so that they can change the version of an individual part of the taxonomy and update that without updating the whole version of the taxonomy itself. So I don't know if anybody's ever had a chance to think about it. It's just if anybody's heard any reasons why somebody would think that was useful for the IFRS taxonomy, or if there's any problems they're having with the way we currently do it. The answer might well be no.
So what's driving this? I mean, is there a certain pain point that is behind this?
More that we haven't asked this question in quite a long time, and that one of the things that came out of the update discussion was that updating a taxonomy is hard. So the question is if you look through the paper and some of the other questions, we go into various of the mechanisms that we could use to try and give more change information if that's useful. The other question being, maybe everything is okay at the moment from a taxonomy version identification point of view. Maybe everybody's got everything they need, and we need to look at other mechanisms.
So updating the taxonomy is hard for you, or it's hard for preparers or users?
Suggested it was a bit of a system cost to introduce a new taxonomy at the moment. And also, because we have regulator extensions of the IFRS taxonomy, each time we update the IFRS taxonomy, they have to analyze their extensions versus what we've introduced that's new, whether or not it has an impact on the stuff they use in the extension, all that kind of thing. And so there's a question is, are we giving as much change information as we could? Are we identifying changes at the right level? Is there anything more we could do on that front that would help that situation? So for example, we don't actually have anything like your change labels describing what's going on. We effectively have versioning afterwards where we provide the versioning report based on diff. We don't store that the information as it changes in the taxonomy.
Right, but those change labels can be generated programmatically for the most part.
But for example, would it be, as users and general regulators, would it be useful if that existed in the IFRS taxonomy?
That's a different question than the versioning, yeah. Isn't it? I mean,
I'm sort of skipping ahead because you asked why we were going down this. If you look, get through the paper, you'll discover Bladet's introductory slide. We ask about the scope first, which was, are the levels we're doing it at the moment useful? But then we also ask about how we identify it. Is the date in the namespace useful? Should we be having a version number instead? Is putting the date in the namespace and changing the namespace of the whole taxonomy every year a problem, or is it really useful? We then ask about the fact how we're tracking and
communicating the
changes,
conference.
Ties back into change labels and stuff. If we track things at an item level, then we could give more information at a concept level. Is that useful? Is the fact we're providing a post-version report diff fine for everybody, or would people prefer more information in the taxonomy? And then we've got, as a final concept, which isn't so tied in quite so tightly, is what we do with that deprecated schema in the long term. We've got short-term fixes there for our modular structure, but is that the right way to handle deprecated elements in the long term? So there's a whole set of interlinked questions. And the major first question being, is there anything wrong with the way we do it at the moment? Because we don't want to go into all this stuff in massive depth, there's nothing wrong with the way we do it at
exactly.
the moment.
That's exactly the observation I want to make, that changing, you know, the text at the taxonomy level, in my head, I think it will give better control rather than changing, you know, the, at the concept level, which may be pretty frequent, I think. And that will be the one more probably control issues, and also, I guess, probably inefficient way to do that. So I would really...
You think keep tracking whole taxonomy versions and communicating them is a good way to
do. Yes.
What about more information about individual changes? If you want to skip ahead to the next slide, then sort of you can see this is where we get into the other areas we've been considering. Is the way we're tracking and communicating things satisfactory? Is there more we could do to communicate on a different level, even if we still stick with high-level versioning? If we remove elements, are we doing that in the most useful way? Is there other information we could just give you about changes?
Yes.
Yes. that last one, I suspect, is possibly the more interesting one.
Other questions, for example, are related to translation updates, for example, for the IFRS taxonomy. At the moment, how we creating the an update, we create a, an entry point, all of the files, labels for the translation. But for example, at the moment, we use the date that it was used for the annual taxonomy that applies this translation. Instead of, for example, using date of publication for the translation, which is a bit misleading, because, for example, just imagine, let's say we translated Spanish translation back in, for example, December, and the date on the files and on the namespaces are the same like the dates from March taxonomy. That's one of the thing is different, for example. Any other suggestions? Okay.
Do you think there are any areas we should especially go and investigate? We've got the EBA model for additional information. Or should we just leave everything exactly as it is?
So, question. If you have something that you want to, let's just assume it's a bolt-on, bad term, a bolt-on to your taxonomy that you want to deliver. I mean, maybe your formula link base fills this space. And let's say you issue it, you update it multiple times during the year, whereas your taxonomy might really just have an annual date on it.
Yeah.
How do you handle that?
Well, at the moment it's a bit tricky, but what we do is when we release the taxonomy, we still use the date on the entry points, not on the files, but on the entry points. The same to annual taxonomy, I think. I know that we create underscore ref as a revision and the date of the revision, which is the published date for the zip file and the files as well. But everything is
for the formula piece?
For the formulas. Sometimes we do that for other translations as well, because sometimes we found some, for example, issue that needs to be replaced immediately. So we reviewed the translation and republished the translation files. And the same way we on the file we add underscore revision and the date of the revision. That's how we handle different version of these files.
Does that seem to work satisfactorily?
Well, we didn't have any complaints at the moment, so. maybe we can proceed to another slide. And these questions are general, and all of them are related to the versioning. So, for example, are there any requirements that you have as a user?
I'll take one then. It's not uncommon from one year to another to roll forward your mapping or tagging from one taxonomy to another. And as you might imagine, if an item's been deprecated, then that's a very easy change to spot. One of the most difficult changes to spot, partly due to software support, is when an additional breakdown in domain memory has been added to a dimension, which now may be the more appropriate choice given the tagging rules in your domain. And there isn't really any good guidance around how to process the various change clues to identify to a user when they're rolling forward that actually now there's more a more appropriate item.
It's something to identify new items much more clearly.
Do you have any suggestion how to do it? Or?
Potentially it might be a flag on the domain itself, which says that it has been extended. But ultimately, this is also about educating software vendors to flag on roll forward, because they could already use the fact that an additional domain member had been added to the domain as the same clue. But
so you're thinking of giving that information in an electronic way, not on. You know, because we do the printouts, we do the versionings and so on, but I guess that's not enough. You're saying put that into the taxonomy.
I think so.
So are there any other questions regarding agenda paper that we send it out? For example, do you have any areas that we should investigate or we should do more research on?
Have left the conference.
It's working, that's good to hear, because that means we don't have to go and change and investigate anything.
Obviously, the silence means that the versioning looks okay and you don't need any modification to the versioning. Is that correct?
I think that's what you're hearing.
Yeah.
Okay, good.
But maybe a better question to ask the vendors. Because they're the ones that are having to process it.
Good point. Right. I think any other question related to me? No? I think I'm done. Thank you.
So just to sum up the time that we're clear. In terms of the quick fix, you are all okay with the quick fix. We give two different namespaces, SMEs and full. In terms of a way forward, you agreed to option one, which was having separate namespaces and prefixes for the deprecated elements to indicate that they were deprecated. We leave the question what to do with the old elements kind of open, with considering Louis' suggestion that maybe we should just delete them all. Yeah, is that correct? Any objections? Just to make sure with like short-term actions, because the other part is a more general view, which we need to do some research on and talk to vendors and so on. But I just want to make sure that we are okay with the quick fixes.
Okay,
thank you.
Obviously, if you have some questions later on, you can always email us and we can continue the discussion either offline or at the next conference call.
But Balu was not on the call. I think he dropped off. Might be good to hear from him.
Mm.
Well,
Okay. Thank you.
John, I suggest we go ahead with my topic on the IFRS taxonomy due process, which probably will be finished by 3:15, and then Bartek has some more time for his topics, because Bartek is
one of the public.
Or then everyone can go home earlier.
Okay, so so we're going to just continue on to your topic.
Good afternoon, everyone. Today I want to provide you another update on the IFRS taxonomy due process. I know we have discussed it on many occasions with you, but now we come to what I hope is a finalization of the due process. So if you can go to the next slide. So what do I want to do today, really? I want to provide you an update on the progress we have made since we last spoke to you. And also I want to discuss with you specific questions I have as regards the involvement of the ITCG in the review of the IFRS taxonomy content and technology. Can we move to slide? Let me first focus on the update. So at last time we talked to you in July, and at that time we informed you about feedback we received on the public consultation of the amendments to IS7, which included a question related to the IFRS taxonomy due process. We told at that time that we didn't have overwhelming public support to align, fully align the standard setting and the IFRS taxonomy due process. At that time, some of you also had some concerns about resources, that if we were to go ahead with a proposal, there were some resources constraints. However, also you said at that time it was really important that the views of the ITCG are heard at an early stage, so that can also help and improve standard setting. We also discussed this topic with ASEF in July, and then based on all the discussions and the public consultation, we took a paper in July to the board where we provided our staff recommendations. Now, I'm not going to discuss it today, all the papers, all the details of the paper, or what was discussed. In an appendix of this presentation, you will see the references to the relevant papers, so if you need more background information. After discussion in July with the board, we proceeded with the drafting of the draft invitation to comment. We presented this, and if you go to the next slide, yeah. We presented this to the Due Process Oversight Committee, the DPOC, in October, and the DPOC agreed that we can go ahead with the publication of our proposed IFRS taxonomy due process. So the agenda paper 7A, which gives it at that time still the draft invitation to comment, is will be now become the invitation to comment that has been approved by DPOC without changes. We are planning to publish that in November. Really, our target is next week, Monday or Tuesday. But this draft invitation to comment will still have a 90 days consultation period, because it really integrates now all aspects of the due process, where we have focused a lot about the due process content, reflecting newer amended standards. It also incorporates now aspects related to common practice, aspects related to technology, etc. So it's a whole comprehensive vision of what we think should be the proposed IFRS taxonomy due process. Then so the consultation will end at the end of January, and then during February and March, the staff will review the comments received with the hope that we can bring a final proposal to the trustees in May. Now, again, the agenda paper gives you the full details of the draft invitation to comment. So here on this and next slide, I'm just going to highlight some key issues. So you know that our original proposal was that really a proposed taxonomy update or taxonomy content should be exposed for public comment at the same time that an exposure draft of the underlying standard was published. However, we made a change to that now. We are really now proposing that we will not go ahead with it, this proposal, but that instead we will propose a taxonomy update for public comment at the time the final standard is being published. Now, why did we do that? Yeah. First of all, I think we received a large number of respondents who did not agree with the proposal. They highlighted especially resources and that it is an ineffective process, because if there still can be many changes between exposure draft and final standard, so it really will impose an extra burden on our constituents to review the taxonomy twice. In addition, there was definitely concerns that this additional process may delay or impact standard setting. We also know that some of you also had shared, you had mixed views on what we should do. And again, I think ASEF also had mixed views on what we should do. But there was this overriding concern of resources consuming, and it really may delay standard setting. Now, when we brought these views to the board in July, the board also, based on these views, did not support concurrent publication and consultation. Yeah. However, there were some members of the board who said, okay, it would be really nice if we could repeat the trial, because one benefit of the trial was that we received a large number of comments on the content of the IFRS taxonomy and the due process. So it really, to some extent, it achieved some of its intended purposes. So some of the board members would say we would like to see more evidence. However, there were not new upcoming exposure drafts which we could use for trial. And also we need to decide at some time. We have been looking at that issue for a long time. So the board said, look, we will go ahead now with this proposal. However, at a later time, which may be 4 or 5, whenever the right time is, when there is a significant usage, practical usage of the IFRS taxonomy by accountants, preparers, users, I think at that time we should revisit this process. However, that doesn't mean that we haven't capitalized on some of the benefits that integration can bring, because I think you and also other some of the people who comment on the public consultation really says that integrating standard setting and taxonomy can bring some benefits. And even this morning at one of the breakout sessions, the topic of this integration and that that bring benefits came up as well. So in the invitation to comment, you will see still some examples of where we have tried to capitalize on the benefits that integration can bring. Now, here in this slide, I've just given some examples. Since one, and these are exact paragraphs of the invitation to comment, since it will say that the ISB papers may still incorporate IFRS taxonomy content-related matters. Because although we do not expose the proposed taxonomy update for an exposure draft, you know as well that Bartek especially is working continuously with the staff when they set standards and draft the exact wording. So if at that stage a particular issue comes up, we can bring it in a taxonomy matters in a board paper. We also really will say in our invitation to comment that the proposed taxonomy has the same status as an accompanying material to our standards. And what we really mean about this, that when you look at the publication package of a standard, you have the core material, which is the standard, but we also have accompanying material. And for instance, the illustrative examples which we currently publish is an accompanying material to the standard. We also say that the proposed taxonomy will be a companion material to the standard because it has to some extent the same power. For those who are more digital inclined, which are more data-centric, it really visualizes and clarifies and helps in the understanding of the presentation and disclosure requirements. However, it may be that it may not be published at the same time as the final standard in cases where a bottleneck may occur, and this could delay the publication of the final standard. Yeah, but the status is a companion material which gives a clear message to the world how important we think the taxonomy is. Another example, which I have not mentioned here in the slide, which you also find in the invitation to comment, is that when an exposure draft is published, this does not preclude us publishing at the same time our taxonomy materials to help with the understanding of the presentation and disclosure requirement. However, the taxonomy materials we'll publish at that time will not have the status of a proposed taxonomy update document, will not be accompanying material, yeah, and will not be something on which we officially seek public consultation. Yeah. So you see, by we have tried to come up with something that really tried to address some of the concerns we have heard without losing some of the benefits we can have from integration. Now, the next topic I want to discuss is the involvement of the ITCG. Thank you, John. And the invitation to comment, again, will stress the important role you have. It will, in the invitation to comment, you will find a description of what the IFRS Taxonomy Consultative Group is about, what their objectives are, and how they're involved in the IFRS Taxonomy due process. And we really feel very strongly that this group really helps to ensure the integrity of the content and technology of the IFRS Taxonomy. Now, the invitation to comment to a large extent already reflect what you currently have been doing all the time, however, we have made two changes. And if you go to the next slide, so I really want to talk for the first change, and this really relates to the due process to be followed for an IFRS taxonomy update reflecting new or amended standards. What remains the same is that you provide us with guidance, so we consult with you when we set the taxonomy updates for new or amended standards. Yeah. We also normally deliver an outline of the proposed taxonomy update and, if prepared, the XBRL files for your review and comments. Whoever you told us, and I think we as the staff share the same concern, that many of your reviews really happened after the final standard has been published, which gives us very limited scope to action some of the comments you provide us with. Yeah. The board has also agreed that, in fact, consideration of the taxonomy can help the clarity of the wording of the standard, so that, in fact, if there are some inconsistencies, they can be spotted at that time. But the board, and one board member explicitly said, I really want to hear not only the comments of Bartek, and not to say that Bartek hasn't great comments, but also I want to hear the comments of the members of the ITCG when we are drafting the final standard. The way we've incorporated is that we are saying now, whereas previously the review of the ITCG happens after the final standard is published, we would like the review of the ITCG to happen at the same time as a fatal flaw review of the standard takes place. Because what normally happens currently, when the standard is being awarded and being balloted, etc., we really send, I'll call it copy, my probably is not the right term, we send like a version of this standard out to external reviewers who really look then if the wording is an accurate reflection of what was agreed and could not be seen things. Now we think at that same time, when fatal review is sent out, we should send at that same time the proposed taxonomy update as well. Then you, as ITCG, can also comment and see if you see any inconsistencies. But also, it gives an opportunity for the our existing external paper reviewers also to look at the taxonomy if they're interested to do that. So again, I think this is something where we try to capitalize again on the benefits we have seen in practice. That also means that reviews will become very important. They are already important, but they will become even more important. Now, on the next slide, I want to talk to you with a change we made for the due process to be followed for IFRS taxonomy technology changes. the same thing, except the one in, the wording in red, all the rest is already existing practice that we developed together with you. Now we must provide you with an update on the proposed taxonomy update document and AVRES taxonomy files before we send it out for publication. However, we spotted one area where we felt our taxonomy due, our existing process was not robust enough. And that's where, when we received public comments on the proposed changes. At that time, really, we could get away with, get away is not the right word, but we could really, we had no external body would really said, okay, what the staff is proposing really reflects accurately and the accurate response to the comments we received. For content changes, we have some process in place because for content changes reflecting newer amended IFRS, the board has to approve it. For content changes reflecting common practice, any public comments we receive there, the IFRS taxonomy review panel, which consists of 3 to 5 board members, has to review it and consider it as well. However, for technology changes, we thought that we have to put an explicit step in our due process that any public comments we receive on technology changes, we must review with you before proceeding to the final taxonomy update. Yeah, to give this additional assurance that we have taken the right steps. So these are the two areas where we have made changes to the way you have been involved in the due process so far. So this brings me to my last slide, which are the questions. And before I go there, I would like to, as I mentioned to you, the invitation to comment will be published next week. I would like you or your organization to encourage you to comment on this invitation to comment, because this is something that the DPSC will look very carefully at. However, I also we will also open the invitation to comment for ITCG review, the same as we open for post-taxonomy update, open for ITCG review, so you can provide us with private review comments,
have joined which the conference.
We assimilate and for which we provide a public summary. So if you feel that is a better way for you to comment on the invitation to comment, then this road is open to you as well. Yeah. But then but the two questions I really have is, first of all, do you agree with the changes we have made? Because this is something different to what we currently do. And the second question I have, you understand from what I said that the ITCG reviews will become even more important also for the board. And is there anything we can do as to how to improve the effectiveness of these reviews? Because I think we really would like you to comment. Yeah, but we also understand, and it's fair to say that whereas at the beginning we received lots of comments, ITCG comments or some of the reviews we sent out to you, I think in the last year probably the comments are diminishing. So is there something we can do better? Is there something we can do to help you, or any suggestions you have for us really? So these are the two questions I have for you today. Yeah, go with the first question is, do all of you agree that with the changes we are proposing?
Well,
yes.
Clarifying question, is the amount of time by which we have to review the information the same, or is it longer or shorter?
Okay, for the review period for the standards, so for content reflecting newer amended standards, that will normally be aligned with the fatal review period of the standard, which I think, and now I'm looking to Bartek or Christy, which I think normally is like 2 weeks, 2 to 3 weeks, fatal reviews.
It depends on the size of the standard. So if a smaller one might be 2 weeks, a big one might be a month or even more. It just depends. And it depends on how busy the board is at the time as well.
I don't think it's below 2 weeks.
No. So it's definitely, you will get more time then. So I think for other things, we have said that the minimum review periods for the ITCG for any other material is 2 weeks, yeah, which is the same as you currently have, unless a matter is very narrow in scope and for which you need very quick answer, then it could be less than 2 weeks meant not less than 1 week. That's what the invitation to comment says.
Yeah, okay. Similar. Sometimes it seems like we got more than 2 weeks on certain things, but so you're saying it won't be less. I guess that's the key.
Normally it will not be less until something is very urgent, but I think we will only use that in very urgent cases. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So will the quality of what we get be the same? In other words,
better.
Is anything different than how we would have received it before, timing wise, quality wise, anything?
I
don't
not know. No.
The only difference might be that the way we give it to you is based nowadays on the final standard.
Yeah.
So and now we are thinking you're gonna be getting a version that is say based on the ballot draft, which formally should not have
pre-ballot,
which shouldn't have many differences, but there is, you know, for us it makes it a bit more difficult for us potentially if, you know, something changes that you didn't get the chance to comment on because it wasn't in the pre-ballot but is now included in the ballot draft in the final standard. But these should be, usually these are minor changes. I mean, if the staff got permission to ballot, that means that all the main decisions have been taken. And it shouldn't change much,
right?
No, and I think we also have to apply judgment there. I think if the change,
I think
really
if there is any significant change, we can just give it to you again and say, you know, focus only on this paragraph, this table. This is something new.
You use your judgment to figure out whether you're providing or not.
So, all of you agree with the changes? Thank you. And on the second point, because, okay, it's great to put it down as a process, but it really has to work effectively. So I really would like to know, is there anything that we can do better to encourage a more effective response or to help you to review the proposed taxonomy updates? Or are we doing already a pretty good job and you're okay?
Can I ask you, as I say that for my information, I'm not the fate of flow review, that's your that's also an external review, right?
Yeah, that's also an external review.
So the whole taxonomy update will then also be part of that flow review as the in the whole review, not only ITCG. It is aligned with the fate of flow review, but will it be part of the fatal group? That's my question.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think so. Yeah.
I don't know if we've actually confirmed that. I would have thought that we would externalize it as well with the fatal flaw review. So we would send the package, the pre-ballot draft, so the fatal flaw, along with the taxonomy. That's what we'd send to the board members. That's what we'd send to external reviewers. You would then be party to that external review.
Yeah, that's what I asked.
Yeah.
Because in terms of alignment, that's quite important. Otherwise, it gets a separate process altogether again.
That is the intention, yes.
So that's the intention.
And it means as well for existing external reviewers of standards, if they want to also look at the taxonomy, they can. If they prefer to do what they currently do, they can ignore them. It gives them at least the opportunity to also look at the taxonomy. For those reviewers, we think that may also help their understanding of the taxonomy, of the presentation and disclosure requirements of the standard.
Yeah, but it's also alignment of processes within the organization.
Yeah, correct. I know. So it can benefit the interaction within particular organizations.
Hey, Mike, you...
Sure. I'm not sure how the process works. So if you publish something, then he sends a comment and you accept it. Is there any informal call towards the end of the period where there could be a Q&A by the group around the ideas?
Okay, what we normally do is we normally capture the comments of the ITCG internally. We publish them on SharePoint, so all the comments are normally, all ITCG members can look at the comments of other ITCG members, and then we have a public session, which can either be a call or could be a face-to-face meeting, where we summarize the review comments we received and what actions we have taken, or if not, why did we not take a particular action.
She.
I was thinking about the sometimes discussing when we are discussing about this taxonomy issues, who, when is amendment or new standards coming, maybe we mean this member of the ITC have a more better to have a more chance to learn from the when you are discussing about standard itself. So for example the regular meetings by telephone conference styles or in other timing if the ISB providing some kind of the explanation about the standard itself, maybe we should be better to learn and then discussing about taxonomy. Because I personally always asking it to some other members who is in Japan. For example, that vice chair of the Mr. Goro Kumagai of the IFRS Advisory Council, vice chair of the IFRS Advisory Council. And also I'm so lucky because I can access to those kind of people very closely. But maybe it's better to if we can have a more chance to learning about the discussion on the standard. When amendment of the standard can be new standard. Mm-hmm. I think maybe we can help more than about this taxonomy.
That's a good point, Chi, and I think to some extent we've been trying to do that. For instance, you made remember the call we had on the IFRS taxonomy for SMEs. If I remember this correctly, Bartek in his presentation gave you like an overview of what is changing to the IFRS for SMEs as well, so that you have some background information on what are the key changes to the standard, and then continue this presentation with the key changes we made to the IFRS taxonomy and where we ourselves are not 100% sure, or where we had to have a second thought as to how we should model our taxonomy, really. So maybe by giving you more continue to do this a presentation before we go out for review, where we tell you what has changed, what are the key changes to the taxonomy, and what are the areas or topics where we think most discussion is necessary, really. So this is something that we definitely can consider doing.
Mm-hmm. I would think a lot of that discussion we already do. So what Bartek does is effectively that process, and that process happens as the board is deliberating the disclosures. And as Rita said, if there's a big issue that we think actually needs the board to address, we now have the option to take the paper at that deliberation stage. So by the time it gets to a pre-ballot, you should be familiar with the particular issues that are in that disclosure requirement through the work that Bartek is doing. So what we're going to do with in the next session is kind of bit of that education.
I agree with the purpose. What we are going to discuss in the next session is about leasing, and we haven't followed the exact process yet. So unfortunately, these comments on leases are more related to, you know, how do we deal in the taxonomy with what we have in the standard. But in the future, we are thinking that, you know, thanks to the involvement, thanks to the interaction, and also we discussions with you, they can take place earlier, which will let us influence, you know, the standard cell. Influence maybe is a bad word, but at least, you know, kind of inform the standard setting on the potential issues that we might have in the taxonomy if something is worded that way, or if that particular disclosure is presented that way, or whatever we don't support, or whatever we need more guidance on also potentially from the board as to how to prepare a good taxonomy.
You okay? So that's first, I think it's you. Sure.
So it may not be relevant today, but our counterpart in USA, FASPI, they does great job. I love FASPI.
Only by coincidence, is sitting next to you.
Every time they change taxonomy, they actually issue wonderful implementation guide, very user friendly, explaining and whole design. And I suppose we can probably.
Thank you.
And this is one of the areas that, in fact, that Bartek will be touching on in his next presentation as well.
My question may have been answered, but so at the risk of repeating it, do you feel like this process will give you sufficient time? So if you get some feedback or discovery on your own during the process that does could change some of the disclosure requirements, so the illustrations that are included with the new accounting standard. Do you think this will give you sufficient time to get those changes made? I know you used the word inform, but in practice, you are in a position where you could actually see something change in the material. And the question is, will you have sufficient time to actually do that?
I think so. I think we, even now, we have the time quite often, because we receive the it's not even a draft. It's not a ballot draft. It's some kind of draft, and we discussed that earlier. The problem that we have now is that we don't have any formal means of actually saying, you know, what we need to ask the question, we need to go to the board, maybe we need to, you know, do something about it. There have been a couple of cases that we just didn't agree with the technical stuff, but we had, you know, no means of actually, you know, even taking the matter, escalating the matter further. And then we just had to live with whatever they've decided. So I think this process just will improve our situation by just giving us the option. Not that I'm trying to use that option often, and I don't know, you know, we aim to use that option. It's just that the option is there, and that kind of changes the scope of the discussion when you're kind of, you know, equal, and you can actually take something to the board, advisors, maybe not to the, you know, full board meeting, but at least to the board advisors meeting, and then start discussing those things. So I just think it improves our position more than our timing. I think the timing already is okay, and obviously in terms of the review that you're going to be making, the pre-ballot is probably the earliest we can do, because that's the first actual, you know, worded, drafted version of the standard. It is late still, but I don't think there is any viable process at the moment that would enable us to do it sooner. I mean, yes, I can take a board paper discussing disclosures and try to discuss them with you, but those decisions that the board makes on the disclosures are usually very general. The application in drafting might be various, and we are quite, I think, successful in discussing with the technical staff on how to word that so that it's still in line with the board decision, and also worded in a way that it's taggable or that it fits in the taxonomy. We've had that discussion quite recently on leases for a disclosure of lessor and the assets that are leased out, and the classification property, plant, equipment, when the decision of the board was only that to require that those assets that are leased are somehow disclosed. That was it. And that the staff had initially the proposal to have a separate class of property, plant, equipment, which we didn't support because we thought that doesn't make sense. It's the classes remain the same, it's just within a class, you should break it down between leased and owned. Leased assets themselves should not be a separately disclosed class. And we discussed that, and we agreed on that. It's still within the board. So if we took that pre-ballot to you, we would have had the same discussion, and probably you would have told us, or just supported our feeling, to go to the technical staff and, you know, quickly aim to change that without actually changing the board decision, without the need to bring the matter back to the board. So I think your input can be very useful on that level. If we give you the final standard, as we give you now, we give you the taxonomy based on the final standard practically. That's it. I mean, you can tell us that we did a good job or we didn't do a good job mapping, but we have no means whatsoever to go back and say, you know what, we need to change that word.
Bringing it to the group earlier is certainly a good idea. I just wanted to focusing on whether you were actually going to have time to process.
I mean, I think as long as the board's decision on disclosures are very general and the board actually doesn't, you know, discuss actual wording almost, That's almost impossible. That's the earliest we can do, and I still have reasonable doubt that we can do everything, but it just improves, and I think we will just get more from the new process than we are getting now. Whether it's the perfect situation, you know, probably not. But
it opens the door for moving forward, I think, on this. I think that's the main
thing. I think also, you know, when we get involved sooner and you get involved sooner and everything, that there's always space to start also educating and start saying, you know what, maybe there is a change in the process that the board deliberates and votes on certain, for example, disclosures. Maybe that should already, you know, the disclosure part should be written actually, you know, quite formal paper to say what the disclosures will look like. And but that's the next step. We surely can do it now. I mean, it's.
I think under this process, there is, as Bartek says, there's two opportunities to be able to influence, or if it needs to be, amend the disclosure requirements that were agreed by the board. So either it's just a drafting issue, in which case you can do that liaising with the staff and taking on board comments you've received in the pre-balloting process. Or if you do think it is a change and it's a fundamental question, there is an opportunity to take what we call go back to the board and take a sweep issue, and that would be something that we think would be fundamental, and we'd hope that that doesn't happen that often, but it is a possibility, and those are two possibilities that we hadn't had previously. So I mean, timing is an issue, but I suppose it's linking into the timing that the technical staff have to ballot, but it can take quite a period of time depending on the size of the stand.
I think no, that was very useful, and thank you very much for your feedback.
Okay, great. So we are